Good afternoon and welcome to our fourth seminar in the Women's Group Mentoring Program Jive Series. My name is Putri Handrianti and I will be your MC today. Before we start today's proceedings, I'd like to acknowledge the Ngunnawal people who are the traditional custodians of this land on which we are meeting. I also pay my respects to the elders of the Ngunnawal Nation, both past and present. I extend this respect to all Indigenous people in attendance today. Our guest speaker today is Chinara Goring-Goring, an assistant professor from the Ngunnawal Center here at UC. Prior to joining our university, she had worked in the federal and state governments and across five universities for more than 30 years. Chinara is a Waka Waka Wooly Wooly woman and carries the traditions of her clan through medicine practice, being a song woman, and teaching Aboriginal law and spirituality to people throughout the world. Chinara's talk today is titled The Road to Eldership, Leadership in the Chukurpa Way. She will talk to us about how elders become leaders in Aboriginal or Anangu life and will share this ancient knowledge with all of us of how children and young people are prepared for eldership all their lives based on spirit and soul development in the power of the sacred way of the Chukurpa. Please join me in welcoming Chinara to the stage.
Hello. I shouldn't say when I first begin, should I? Wapalya. I want to acknowledge the Ngunnawal elders of this land, the country on which we stand today and on which this wonderful university has been built. It's very important to acknowledge them. For many years they were not acknowledged, and for many years, as you know, Aboriginal people were not acknowledged as the original and very ancient custodians of this country. So we acknowledge them with kanyini, unconditional love and respect and regard. Thank you, Palya. So I'm going to start today by singing, and if you want to join in, you can. I'll put this down. All right, so this song is from my mother's country, Waka Waka Wooly Wooly, which is in central Queensland. This song was written many, many thousands of years ago by the women of our country to help us bring water to our country. So this song is a song of medicine and healing. It's also a song that sustains all life, all living things, because our connection to land and country is not just ourselves as human beings, but also to all living things. And we have the right of sovereignty over all living things, so it's very important that we maintain and sustain those things. So I'd like you to sing it with me if you want to, and if you can't sing, I'm happy for you to just go that's okay too. And please tap with the right hand on your leg. Yeah? Two elders from our Ngunnawal Centre, Aunty Rosalind Brown, who's a Ngunnawal Elder and Chair of the Ngunnawal Elders Council of this country, and Uncle Wayne Appleby, who's also a lecturer at our university. So welcome to them and to any other Aboriginal people who are present. So my talk is about the road to eldership. As you probably realise, this stuff is not written down very much. People who've studied our people for a very long time have written quite a lot of stuff about us, but some of this stuff is not stuff that we reveal to people outside our clans. This is stuff that you actually have to be invited into and acknowledged by people in a family or in a group or in a community and accepted and regarded as family in order to learn. Some lucky Migloo white people have had the opportunity to do that and others have not. So part of my life's development and my life's work really is the learning of how to be an elder. It's quite serious business in our life as Aboriginal people. We take our responsibility to the earth, to the land, to every living thing in it, to all the humans that are born here, all the animals, to the elements very seriously. My tjokopa, which is our sacred business, so it's the Ngunnawal word for the sacred business, the law, tjokopa, is the making of rain and water and bringing water to country. And you've probably heard Aboriginal people talking about their dreaming, which is similar to the tjokopa, so same thing, as being relations to honey ants or relations to goannas or relations to kangaroos or other living beings. So we all have relationship to something, something on country that's important to us that we have responsibility for. And we're given that at a certain point of time in our life. And throughout our life, it's our responsibility, with other people who also have the same responsibility, to take care of those things. So I was blessed, in a sense, to be brought up on the country that I was born on. And even though it was not my mother's traditional country, Waka Wulli Wulli land is in the centre of Queensland. We were born in western Queensland at a place called Longreach, so outside of Longreach, if some of you might know where that is. And so I have a very deep spirit connection to that place, but it's not my proper country. Our country was owned by pastoralists who had settled there, so we could never go there. But my grandfather grew up on country with my mother, and so my mother grew up on country with grandfather. So we were blessed in a sense that because he was exempt under the Queensland Act, which meant that Aboriginal people were herded onto missions, he had an exemption, which was a pass you carry around with you, and he had to show that where he went. So he kept us out of the system of missions and being herded off to different places because of this exemption. And, you know, I feel very blessed about that, even though we didn't escape the traumas of colonisation and forced acculturation, and we suffered from it. We were lucky to have grown up with grandfather, who was, in our tradition, a lawman and a holder of many of the important things. And as a result, my mother and her brothers and sisters grew up with that knowledge. And I grew up listening to her singing songs in the kitchen and going out onto country when there were no white people around. We had to hide from white people in order to sing songs and keep up the dances and ceremonies. And then later on in my life, after I'd gone to boarding school and come home, I said to my mother, I don't want to just be a migloon, because we were in the generation where you were forced, more or less, to move and assimilate into white culture, so I'm 52, the 50s and the 60s. And I said to her, I need to hold on to the knowledge and I need to go and learn it. So I'd not really learnt anything from about the age of 10, 12 when I went to boarding school. And so I needed to do all that sort of puberty stuff that you do as an Aboriginal woman, learning to be a woman, an Aboriginal woman, and later an auntie and a teacher and an elder. And I don't know if it was just the spirit of my grandfather or what it was, but I had this very strong pull. And my mother said to me, no, you've got to be white now. And I never really understood that for a while, but I kept insisting that she let me go. So at the end of my first year of Teachers College, she said, all right, you can go. And I went up to the Western Cape, or the Western Cape, York, and I lived in Kawanyama, Edward River and Arakoon, which is where people that were connected to my mother's Jokapa lived. So I learnt the Jokapa that belongs to water and to bring water and rain and medicine and healing. So this is some background to me that tells you that I've learned the things that I need to learn to speak to you today. And this is how we describe ourselves. We don't say, oh, I'm Professor Janara Goring Goring, or I'm, you know, this or I'm that. We describe ourselves in relation to our country, in relation to our language, in relation to the people that we have relationships with, in relation to our clan and our elders. And that places us in a place, and it says that's where we belong, that's our responsibility, that's our custodianship, and that's what we live for. So you know now. When I was 19, 20, I was lucky to have met, through my background of traditional dance performance, because I was a traditional dancer and I liked to do it, so I got involved with the Aboriginal Islander Dance Theatre, and I met Uncle Bob Randall, who's the traditional owner of Uluru, and an elder, a Jilpi, we say, of the Aangu people, and Dorothea Randall, who was our dance teacher. And through that relationship, they lived here in Canberra as well as at Uluru, and through that relationship, from a young woman, I then entered into the ceremonial life of that family and the Aangu people. So I've been blessed to have both from my mother's side, and then a more deeper, I guess, because we had lost a lot. Grandfather was the oldest one that had had our business. And then my mother is the oldest in our family that speaks our language without English, and she's 82 now and will die soon. So the Aangu people, many of them, my Nana Barbara Jiktu, who's a traditional owner of Uluru, has never left that land. And they grew up as children meeting white people for the first time in the 30s, in the 1930s. And so they hold their law and culture very strong. So I've been blessed to have the teachings and learning from them over the last 30 odd years. So I speak to you today from that place as well, with their permission, as I share with you their law of Kanyini Junku, which is to care together. Kanyini is the law that holds and binds all of us in relationship to everything on the planet when we become human. So I'll speak in their language as well as speak in my own to share this knowledge and acknowledge that the Ngunnawal people here have also their own very powerful stories that I'd like you to go and avail yourself of learning about, and perhaps we'll have the opportunity for you to also hear from the Ngunnawal elders one day. So Aboriginal life is really about a path of enlightenment. It's a sacred life. It's not just a life lived on the land in a harsh environment, but it's a life of sacred growth. Our law was given to us by the... the microphone, says my daughter. Can you hear me better now? Oh, sorry. Thank you. I sometimes think my voice carries further than it does. So we live a sacred life. I'll talk to you about the business before white people came, yeah? And this is the business that we are holding on to, because it's our job to hold on to this. And as you've realised from the last 232 years, we have not lost it. So it's with us very strongly, because the Jokapa, the ancestors in the Jokapa, are always with us. So we grow up learning that we are born sacred as children, and the way in which we come into the world is has a very sacredness about it, the way our parents see us and how they view us and the things that happen on the land and around us when our spirit comes into our mother's body, and the way that we're brought into the world is sacred. And everything about it is about allowing a child to grow up without being damaged too early in their life so that they grow whole. I believe it was a very functional society, and that we've actually acquired the disease of Migloo culture in the last 232 years of dysfunctionality. So I'll explain a bit about what that means. We have a sacred Jokopa path from birth to death, and our whole system has been established so that children grow up in a circular hierarchy where they move from one age to the next through a series of ritual passages or ceremonies. And as they become able, through their own practice and management of themselves, to understand themselves and their emotions and their mental capacity, also their intellectual capacity, matches up with their physical growth, their elders and their teachers watch them and watch how they are. And they encourage them to move through into the next rite of passage. But a child will never move into the next level or the next sort of hierarchy of what they're learning until they themselves acknowledge to themselves that they're ready to go there. So they're not forced or controlled. They're watched and they're nurtured, and then they move through a ritual ceremony. So this first PowerPoint that I'm showing you just establishes what Aboriginal society looked like. So I'm talking to you now from a general point of view. All the clans, in some way or another, had a structure that was their own. But generally, as I look at all the clans I've looked at over the last 30 years, they all consist of a similar pattern. It's a circular structure where the elders are the protection of the community and the, you might say, the watchers over the community. Whenever they come to ceremony or corroboree, the men sit on one side and the women sit on another. When they have community dialogue about how they're going to make decisions or judgments in a community, the same thing happens. The men sit on one side and the women sit on another because they see themselves as complementary in the whole circle. So the males are complementary to the women and the women are complementary to the men. Women have a sacred life that is just as important as the male sacred life. So there was never one above the other. And we were taught that no one human being is ever better than another. You all have amazing qualities, and we all have negative traits, but we all have qualities which we have to nurture. And there's something going on in here. And we're all unique. So it was the elder's job and your teacher's job, your grannies, your grandparents and your aunties and uncles, to watch what were your qualities so that your qualities could be nurtured and emerged. So that was our job. And it's a job when you get older and become an auntie, a bit like me, because I'm getting to that point. Not there yet, but I'm getting there. So elders are really the wisdom because of their lived experience, their knowledge, also the knowledge of the secrets and the sacredness of life, but their lived experience of being able to put everything they know into thoughts, words and actions that were the same. So we don't say one thing and do another. This is not the practice of our lives. The most important thing is the memory of the law, which I've put in the centre. So there are foundational laws in Aboriginal culture that are the same for every single clan. The laws of respect, the laws of unconditional love. These circles that you see here are just the groupings of ages by which children would sit in a circle according to their level of movement through ceremony or initiation. Oh, that works. When it came to the governance of the community, we had a whole structure. A lot of people have done a lot of study of us about our systems and our governance systems, and I don't think a lot of them have really hit the truth of it, really, because it's hard to understand if you've not grown up in a culture like ours and you're not one of us. It's very difficult to understand what it is like and what it feels like to be in a community like ours. But we teach children to be boss of themselves. Yeah? And basically that means to be self-managing. They're encouraged to stand up and be strong. They're encouraged to speak their truth. They're encouraged to grow up healthy and whole. So as soon as they go through puberty initiation, they must speak at a community meeting. They're required to offer their opinion, and the elders encourage them to talk and help and share in the opinions and decision making of everyone. And that's how they grow up to be people of discernment. So eldership is based on qualities and virtues that include things like the ability to judge, the ability to tolerate, the ability to be unconditionally loving, the ability to resolve conflict. So in the whole community, they practice those things so that they are role modelling for the children what it is. And then the children learn by watching. There's no great better learner than by seeing somebody older than you who you love and respect and who love and respects you doing something and encouraging you to do it as well. So this is just, I like to draw a lot of circles, as you can see, colourful circles. And these are colourful circles to describe the age groups by which children move from one level to another. So the centre of everything is the creator being. So the Wiradjuri people who are west to this country use the word Bayami to describe that being. In our clan, we don't have a word because we consider it so sacred we keep it in silence. So the centre of everything is that being, and then of course the law, and then of course the ancestral Jokopa beings who came and brought the law. And they are always with us and always around us, and we can always talk to them and receive guidance from them. So this is part of our spiritual way, to always have our ancestors with us. So my grandfather, who was a lawman, is always with me, and you know, if I'm worried or anxious or anything, I can always ask him, what do you think? And I'll get an answer. So a child will grow up through the levels of ritual and initiation, which is basically what those circles represent. And as they get older, they come out to the edge of the circle and they become elders. And they become elders based on going up through this education system that we have. So your mother is not really your mother. Your auntie is your mother, and you are mother to her children, because it breaks that difficult emotional bond that children have with their parents. So we set that system up so that children can grow up in that way with someone they can love and respect. You know how you are quite connected to your mother, and it's really difficult to take discipline from your mother, you know, and you rebel and all that. Don't know about you, but I did. And so it's much easier. So we actually knew quite a lot about psychology. So the whole system is set up so that it works well. So children are not ever controlled or hit or told what to do in a loud voice, because we recognise that that affects your psyche. So children, I've watched a whole lot of women, elder women, teach younger children just by repetition. And they just show them, and they're very gentle the way they encourage and cajole them along. Yeah? And when we were little, we were taught to follow, and we would sing as we followed, and we would walk with our aunties and our mother, and we would go off to collect, you know, bush tucker or whatever we were doing that day, and they would just encourage us to follow. And it's a very beautiful way to learn, you know, because a child learns that they're loved and cared for. Your grandfathers and your grandmothers are your spiritual teachers. So they're another level of wisdom above your aunties and your teachers. When women start having children and men reach, you know, about past the age of 30, when they start becoming parents, they're considered to be training to be teachers. So they become the teachers of the children. When children are little, all the children grow up with the women until the puberty initiation. So all the little boys and the girls grow up together. Now, different clans might have done different things, but this is how our system was and how the Anangu system is. So all the children grow up with the women, and the boys learn from their aunties and their mothers what it is to be with girls. So when they go through puberty initiation, then they learn from the men what it is to be in relationship with a woman as a man. So they're taught this system, which helps them learn to be functional human beings. So how do people become elders? It's a long journey of life. And as my Uncle Bob said to me 2 weeks ago when he was here giving a talk, he said to me, we are invited by the people to be elders. And I'd not heard that before. I knew that you were invited by elders to be elders. But he said, we are invited by the people. So what he was saying to me was, in Anangu culture of the Central Desert, which is the Pitnadjara, Yankatajara, Nadnadjara people, the people in the community who see you behaving in a certain way for a long period of time invite you to be an elder. So part of the system you've seen now is that elders become elders because they get older. And that's true and it's proper, but it's also part of the breakdown of our culture and our clans because of what's happened over colonisation. So it's done these days, I believe, to show the level of respect and resilience that older Aboriginal people have managed to survive, you know, because we tend to die pretty early. So it's a bit magic if you get past the age of 55 or 60. 45 or 50 for men, 55 or 60 for women. And as my mother used to say to me, when you start getting wrinkles and grey hair, then people will start, you know, talking to you about, you know, being proper and learning to be an elder properly. So I waited a long time for wrinkles. Still haven't got any. But I'm getting grey hair, so maybe it'll happen to me when I'm 70 or something. So elders are invited by the people. The men and women govern the whole community, and how you become an elder is on the basis of various qualities. So the first and the main quality is to show humility. It's a pretty nice quality. I'd like it in some of our prime ministers or politicians. So people are invited because people have watched them for a really long time, and they've watched them in their thoughts, words and actions, learning and being and showing humility. So it's something that we strive for in our lives, to be humble or to learn what it is to be humble by watching others. Because I don't know about other Aboriginal people, but I have a deep desire to be a proper elder. So I want to learn. And, you know, when I don't do it, I don't feel guilty or shamed about it. I just feel like, oh, well, I've got to do it better next time. I used to feel really bad about it when I was younger, but I don't anymore, because it's all just about learning. So as you get older, there are various levels that you go through of knowledge that people share with you that actually help you to be better at it. The other qualities of an elder, let me see if I've got, no, it's not there, sorry. The other qualities are to be able to resolve conflict amongst the clan. So amongst sections of the community in which you live, family, other people, and to be able to mediate in between groups that are having arguments or disagreements. And people always go to the elders to settle those kind of disagreements because they're seen as wise in judgment and discernment. And so it's a quality that you practice throughout your life. And you're given the opportunity by the people in your community to actually engage in mediation work. As you get a bit older and as they see you sort of using your intellect, they call you and they suggest that you come and you be involved. And you might actually sit with a number of other elders and you learn by watching and being involved, and then you'll get the opportunity to have a go, and then you'll get more opportunities to have a go until you become very proficient at it. And sometimes people are born with the ability. So the elders watch all the children from very young. They watch the qualities that a child might have. And so a child might have an ability to listen deeply to another person, to do dadiri in a very deep way, which is deep listening and feeling the person's spirit, and understanding and knowing how that person feels. So they might become what you'd call a counsellor as they got older. Or someone might have the ability to impart knowledge in a good way, so they might become a teacher. And so on. So everybody would have a role, and often it's also in the genes. Yeah? So in our family, medicine is in our genes. It's in our genealogy. So my mother had medicine, my grandfather had medicine, so it's in our genes. So it comes down a line, it tends to come down a line. So let me talk a bit about the foundational laws of Aboriginal culture. You feeling all right up there? I'm talking a lot. So the three laws of respect was a foundational law given to me from our elders. And it's a law that when it's given to you, it's your responsibility to live it. So I got given this when I was in my late 20s, early 30s, and I tell you it's a shock when you don't follow it. It's a shock because you realise it's actually a deeply spiritual gift that you're given, and you do know and you acknowledge that it is, but then it's in the practice. So as soon as you don't practice it, then you realise how deep the gift is. Yeah? So the three laws of respect in the Waka Waka clan is something that's very important to us, and it's a law that we would also share and impart with other clans. So various clans would have different things, but this is a law that I've also seen in the Anangu clan. So they have this deep knowledge that it's very important to respect another individual's right to just be, in a capital B-E, to just be, because we see beings as sacred. Aboriginal people are considered spirit beings before we're human beings, and when we leave our human form, we become sacred spirit beings again in the Jokapa. So while we're in human form, we don't just see ourselves as our physical form, and the reason we paint ourselves is so that we can see our spiritual form. You understand what I mean? Have you ever seen an Aboriginal person that's been painted? They look like their spirit being. So respect and honour the self first is a very powerful part of the law, and I believe this law would be very powerful for us to begin teaching and using with our own young people, because they get born into a world where to be black is actually to be nothing in Australia. I have to tell you the truth. To be black is to be considered nothing, to be shameful, to be treated racistly, to be treated like less than. You know, we were always told we were less than at school, that we were nothing, that we were savages, or we were this or we were that. So you grow up with the shame of that. So what person can hold on to their self-esteem and their self-respect if they're not allowed to feel that everything about them is beautiful and whole just as it is? Any human being. So this was a foundational part of our law given by the ancestors, because they knew for us to be able to hold on to country, look after country and look after the earth and these laws, that we had to have this sense that we were strong and powerful people. So if every one of our children was imbued with this sense from an early age, they would be incredibly strong. So this is the law that we must hold for our children. Respect and honour the self comes first, so that if you're in a relationship with somebody, you don't put them first. So you know what it's like in Miglu culture, and you know I'm talking generally, so don't feel shame. But people become very codependent to each other in relationships, and you always put them first, you know, and then you end up in very difficult dependent relationships. You know, domestic violence is an abuse, and one of, you know, those are relationships where people don't put themselves first. And it's very hard to do it as well. So if you grow up in a family or a situation where you're not taught this, it's very hard to do. So imagine my journey of growing up, you know, in Catholic boarding schools and being taught, you know, I was nothing, and being given a separate room on the veranda because none of the white girls wanted to sleep in the dormitory with me, even though my mother was paying exactly the same amount for me to be in boarding school as they were. So you can imagine, you know, there I was being told I was nothing, and actually to hold on to your self-respect is really difficult. So I was really grateful to be given this law, but for many years I didn't do it because it's difficult to learn. But when you start practicing, it actually makes you very strong. So then the second part of the law is to respect and honour everyone else you come in contact with in your life. Can you imagine? Yeah? So you imagine how they felt when Captain Cook and Captain Phillip came and all that mob came, and their job is to respect and honour other people, and they're going around shooting people or whatever they're doing. So imagine how difficult that would have been for people. I still find it difficult to respect and honour other people, and sometimes I do it too much, you know. So it's finding the balance of how to do these laws. And the elders, you know, they let you practice, and then they're there with, if you have questions. But often, you know, we don't go and ask questions because we don't want to feel like we don't know what we're doing. too. So you've got to sort of show your wisdom too. So respecting and honouring everyone else means that I can disagree with people, but I've got to be very careful with how I do it. And I'm not good at this one. This is one that I find really hard to do. You know, I want to do it because I want to be a good and compassionate human being, but the practice of it, because of my own history, has been something that's been difficult to come to. So I'm getting to it, you know. When I was a young woman, I used to be so angry at white people. I'd go and spray Parliament House with red, black and yellow paint, and I'd be the first one on the front line at the protests, you know. But that's all gone. A lot of the anger's gone now, because I want to be able to follow the law so that I can also help other Migaloo people learn how powerful our law really is. Because I was told by an elder some time ago that it was my responsibility to help all the Migaloo people learn this law so that they could learn how to live in the country that they've now claimed as theirs. Because it's very powerful. You know, you walk on our country. We've been here, my auntie used to say, we've been here from time immemorial. You know, just endlessly infinite. Not 100,000 years, not 60,000 years. And we don't even have a word for time in our language because it doesn't exist. That's pretty amazing, isn't it? So, you know, this, you walk on a country that's very ancient, amongst a group of people that have a very ancient and wise system that was established over a very long period of time. And I'd like you to learn to honour it, because it is very powerful and there's a lot in it for you to learn in order to govern your own country in a good way, I believe. So the third one is to respect and honour Nunjanatiya, which is our word for our mother, the earth, because we believe that the earth has borne us. We're born from the Jukapa through the land, and that makes our relationship with the land very strong, because our human spirit is born physically on the earth. And it means not just Australia, because Australia's not unconnected from the rest of the earth. Yeah? And as my uncle says, our sovereignty comes from our right over all living things because we take care of them in the unconditional love of Kanyini. So because I acknowledge and love every living thing around me, blanketly, then I have the right to be sovereign over the land. This is where our custodianship comes from. We don't say ownership because we have no word for owning anything. Yeah? Not in our clan, maybe in other clans, there's no word for ownership. So I talked about Kanyini. Kanyini is the law of harmony with all living things. It's unconditional love, essentially, in a word. And it means that I have regard, respect and honour for everything that exists, and that I care about that and I take care of it. This is a big law, you know. These were huge laws that were given to us by our ancestors. And when I say we take them seriously because we know our lives are dependent on this. When we leave and go to the Jukapa, there'll be ancestors there saying, so how'd you go by the law? You know, and I want them all to nod their heads at me. I want them to all, you know, look at me and go, yeah, you did it all right. You did it okay. So there are four important things. Where are they? Where'd they go? Oh, sorry, I got... What did I do with them? Oh, they're on the first one. Sorry, I'll just go back. So the four important things are the self or the spirit, which we call Kurumpa, the family and relationships, which we call Walcha, the ancestral beings, Bayami, the creator being, and the Jokapa beings, and Nura, our land, our country, and Jukapa, which is our sacred law. And Kanyini Junku means we care for all these things together, and that's our responsibility of living on this land. If you ever want to see anything about Kanyini, there's a film that Uncle Bob Randall has done called Kanyini, and it's in the library here, so you can watch it if you want. It's a pretty good film. So Napaji Napaji is the law of reciprocity. This is a very subtle law. So if I make you a cup of tea, you will make me a cup of tea. It's a bit like that. But it's very subtle because no one walks around saying, you owe me, You need to give me something in return for that. It happens in this very subtle way. So I might do something for you and you won't even know that I did it, but somehow in a spiritual way you'll pick it up and you'll give something back to me later on. So it's actually done on this very spiritual plane. People don't talk about it. People don't say, oh, I'm doing Nupajee with you now. You just know. Sometimes we do. We say Nupajee, Nupajee. One of my other daughters, my adopted daughter, she said to me last week, I'm going to do some Nupajee, Nupajee with your auntie. I'll come down and help you pack your things if you look over this essay for me. Like, okay, Nupajee, Nupajee. There's actually a really good play that was put on a couple of years ago in Sydney called Nupajee Nupajee. So it means that we know that when we take something, we give something back in return, we never leave anything empty. So if I, if we kill a kangaroo to eat, we always have this sacredness about it. Yeah, it's not just because we're doing it. Our whole lives were actually not... There was hardly any violence. So if I talk about the law of big bit killed and little bit killed, these were laws that were... So the law of punishment and payback is very strong in our community because it's a sacred business. If you do anything to anybody, you actually are damaging and wounding them very hard. So it's important that the law is the same. So rape, murder, and there was no incest... But rape and murder were punished by the law of big bit killed, as we say in our clan, which means that people were speared dead. Yeah? And the reason they were done then was as soon as they're speared dead, their business, their karmic business, is settled in the Jokopa. So it's a proper good law because it means they can go to their ancestors free of what they did. So it's a very clean law. If somebody was caught... stealing or sleeping with somebody they shouldn't, they get a spear in the leg. And that hurts. Spear in the thigh, can you imagine? And people take their punishment because the law is based on a spiritual law. And they know. So you've heard of Aboriginal people who've gone to jail and then they come back home and they take their punishment because they know it's proper. Whitefella law isn't that as important as blackfella law. So... I like to show this slide to people who've been stolen from their families because a lot of them feel like they never can return or they've lost, you know, their cultural heritage. And I always pull people up if they say we've lost this or we've lost that, or if white people say Aboriginal people have lost this or they've lost that, because the Jokopa teaches us that we never lose any of it. It's always just sort of sitting above our heads, as it were. Is that Uluru has a central role to play in the connection of all the clans, because all the song lines that were created by the ancestors that brought the law travel through that place. So it's a very important place. So it means that if I'm from Waka Waka Woolly Woolly, which is over here in Queensland, my song line is actually connected to Uluru and it goes to the top of Cape York and it comes back down again. So everybody has their own that links their clan, because at one time all the clans were linked way, 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 way back. So this story tells the story of how the woman, Nunjanatia, who borns all our children, her womb is in Uluru. So this is a story of how we're all connected. I won't tell the story because it's sacred, but that's enough you need to know. So this is also a slide I like to show Aboriginal people who get into the feeling that they've lost everything. And we try to remind them, or we remind them, don't try, that they were here for a really, really long time. And they are in the inheritors of a very ancient and long knowledge. Way back before the kings were in Egypt, no, the pharaohs were in Egypt, or before Rome had emperors and everybody else, there were Aboriginal people here living in a society that was established and functional. It's hard for people to imagine. And that this period of history is a very short one and it's going to go like that. So 20 years ago, one of my old elder teachers, who's now left, said to me, just wait. In 20 years' time, you will see a difference. And he said to me that this period of time of people coming here to our country is a short period of time that will be endured, and both sides will learn a lot of things, and then it will change. So, you know, he's talking about, obviously, the cyclical movement of time. So, what more should I tell you? I thought I might just... how's time going? Yeah? Time's moving right along. Imagine if time doesn't exist in your world, eh? I still find it challenging to get to lectures on time. Okay, so I thought I might just add this little thing in. A couple of years ago, I worked in corporate transformational leadership with a corporate company, which was very interesting and challenging, I must say. And one of the things that we used to use with our clients, who were some of the major corporate people in Australia, was this idea that Professor Keegan from Harvard University used, which was that leaders... the most powerful leaders in the world are people who are sacred in their way. Yeah? So that systems where there are people who are, you know, codependent or not very integrated, he had this system of explaining that if you were more integrated, your system based on the leader would work better, and that if the leader was sacred, and he would say people like, you know, Gandhi or Nelson Mandela or people like that were leaders that were sacred that people would follow. And when I read that, I used to think to myself, you know, our whole system, our whole Aboriginal system is based on a person being sacred from birth to death, and that people follow their elders and invite them to be elders because they actually are, and they show the very sacred way of living. So, you know, people from Harvard are proving that our system is just the way it should be. So I think I should leave it there. So we were going to have questions, and then I want to finish with a song. Should I do the song first? No, I'll do the song at the end. So we'll have questions and then I'll sing a song to finish. Okay.
Do they have to have this? You need this? Talk up loud.
Thanks very much for that, Janara. I was just wondering how this wisdom could be shared more broadly with all Australians so that we learn these ways. What's your ideas about that?
So what do you reckon? You, what do you reckon? I think it'd be great, hey, to share it more and more, wouldn't it? So, you know, a lot of people have been doing it for a long time, you know, just sharing their own wisdom. Elders everywhere share their wisdom. I guess, you know, there's this kind of thing in Australia. People don't really understand or respect Aboriginal people for having this kind of a system, you know. I think the whole thread of imagining that we were subhuman and, you know, the place was an empty land, still exists in people's minds. And when they look at Aboriginal people, what do they see now? You know, drunks, uneducated, you know, unemployed, in prison. You know, they see the sort of dregs at the end of being acculturated for 230 years. So people don't have a lot of regard and respect for Aboriginal people, unfortunately, because they don't really know a lot of this either. And we don't share it with people because we don't want people to use it in the wrong way. We have a deep responsibility to it. So I reckon whatever you think's a good idea, we should do it. Thanks, Ross. Our Auntie Ross, a wise elder of the Ngunnawal.
Yep. I think just answering to Mark. I think one of the ways would be if we all, you know, like share the three fundamental laws you had, like respect for self, respect for others, and the respect for the environment. I think that's the clue to, and if we teach everyone that those concepts, that's the start. Where we can all respect each other. I had another question. I was looking at the center of your the system, do you have a concept of creator, like as we see God is the creator? Do you have something like that or not?
Thanks. So yeah, as I said earlier, we have a concept of a creator being, a higher being that is beyond in the Jokapa, and the Wiradjuri people who live nearby here call that being Bayami. Yeah. I don't know of any clan that doesn't, because the Anangu people have a similar belief, and I've never heard any clan that said it doesn't. Ross, do you want to say something? Darumala, that's right. Wow. I didn't know that. Wow, I didn't know that, Arnie. Oh, Darumala, there you go. Actually, they did a lot of that stealing, didn't they? Sorry, you mob, but your mob, they really stole a lot of stuff. It's good we got a good sense of humour, eh? And we're very resilient as people. Yep. Yeah, so in terms of that, I would describe it in this way. When someone wounds you, it's your responsibility to make amends. So we have this law this way, that it's important to go to that person and be upfront. You know, that shows that you're a grown-up, that you're an adult. You go and you actually say, I'm sorry for what I did, and you explain, you know, so you know that's what I did, and you make amends. And our law is that you actually have to do that as soon as you can. You have to get yourself ready inside internally to show up and have the correct intention. So I used to say to people years ago, when people would go on about the apology, it's very important that the apology gets said, because in our system, for someone to actively go and make amends is very important. Yeah. And that's what the law of Big Bit Killed and Little Bit Killed essentially encompasses, you know, that the amends is made immediately. Like, they actually go out and they do it straight away. Yeah. Thank you. Any more takers? All right. Well, it was really good to talk to you, all you deadly people. So I'm going to sing you a good song now. This is a good song from our water Jokapa. It's a very ancient and old song. And so I'm going to ask you to close your eyes just to, in honour of its sacredness. It's called Kapinya. It's a song that tells a story about how the water came many thousands of years ago to wash away all the negativity that was not allowing people to live the law together. And we've seen a lot of that happening in Australia lately. So we'll sing the song for you. And it's also a good medicine song. So if there's anything in you that doesn't allow you to be true to yourself, it helps remove it.
Coffee now.